Katie here popping in for just a moment. I want to give you something to think about. If you live in the United States, chances are that you are already sick of talking about politics in the lead up to the election that we are facing in November. According to the Pew Research Center, 65% of Americans, when asked, said they felt exhausted at the thought of politics. And no matter what side you stand on, one thing we can all be certain of is this is going to be an exhausting, irritating, and stressful election year, most likely. So here's something I want you to think about. When the election is exactly 1 month away, where would you like to be? Do you want to be at home, stressing out in the last month before the election? Or would you prefer to be in Rome, learning about ancient and medieval and Renaissance Rome, seeing how this beautiful and ancient city still influences our thought and life and culture today? Do you want to be seeing hidden sites that tourists and locals alike never get to see? This October 2024, from the 6th to the 12th, Tiffany and I are taking a group of lucky listeners on a tour through Rome, a tour like no other. We want to open doors of thought and sight so that you walk away from Rome feeling refreshed rather than exhausted. And what could feel better during an election year than being refreshed and inspired rather than depleted and annoyed? Space is limited to 10 rooms only. You can come by yourself or bring one friend. I hope you will consider joining us. Send us an email, bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com, and I will send you all of the details. bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. And how great it is? Well, you don't just have to take my word for it. Here is one of our listeners who traveled with us to Rome last year.
I came to Rome kind of unprepared. I didn't really know the history. I didn't really know what to expect, per se, and it was really easy to jump into the trip. But I was exposed to a lot of history in this trip, and it gives me a better idea of the history of Rome and how the art portrays and documents that history. Everything was well organized, and it was a really good time. Tiffany did a great job at sharing her own love of the art with us. And through her love of the art, I now have a better appreciation and my own little love for particular artists.
Send us a note. Let us give you all the information. bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. Come to Rome and be renewed in the run-up to this election. Welcome to Rome. This is The Bittersweet Life with Katie Sewell and Tiffany Parks. Hello, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell.
I'm Tiffany Parks.
Tiffany over in Rome, Katie in Seattle. This show supported by listeners. Thank you so much for those of you who have thrown a few nickels in the hat to keep this show running. We really do appreciate you. And if you've ever thought to yourself, you know what, I really love this show and I really would like it to not go anywhere, I highly encourage you to look in our show notes and see for ways that you can support the show. All right, I'm going to toss today's show topic over to Tiffany in Rome. Tiffany, what do you want to share?
Well, you know, Katie, every so often in Rome or in Italy in general, you get a major discovery. You know, everyone thinks, well, it's all ancient history. Mm-hmm. But the truth is their archaeology is constantly going on here.
Yes.
And so they're constantly making new discoveries and finding new things and opening up new parts of, you know, an ancient site that's never been open to the public. They just opened up last summer the Largo Argentina area. You know what I'm talking about when I say Largo Argentina, right?
I do, but some people might not, if you want to describe
it. Yeah, if you don't know Rome, it's in the very center of the city near Piazza Venezia. And it's this section of town that's just completely separated by barriers. And you can look down into it. And there are the ruins of four ancient temples there. Extremely old temples, by the way. Like, way older than the Pantheon. And up until literally last year, the only people, quote unquote, people who were allowed to go in there were cats.
Right. And the nuns that fed them, right?
Yeah. And now they've opened it up to the public, which is, I mean, you know, it's, I feel kind of bad for the cats.
I do too. I do too. I was thinking that same thing when I walked by last time I was visiting Rome and I looked down there and saw tourists walking through there. I'm like, but the cats.
I know.
It was the cats area.
First of all, you could only walk on certain areas of like a little pathway. So the cats do have access to lots of areas that humans don't have access to. But I will say there are a lot fewer cats down there than there used to be.
Yeah, they've all scattered to the hills, that's for sure. Mm. Speaking of cats, if you can hear one wailing behind me, I think he's feeling the plight of his Roman brethren right now. So, yeah.
Well, you might more likely hear two little 8-year-old kids because Aurelio, we're taping this at a much earlier hour today. And Aurelio has a little friend over and they're being 8-year-old boys, so you might hear them as well.
Yeah, there you go. So
that's just one example of, you know, the exciting things that are happening in Rome kind of all the time with, you know, discoveries and with new archaeological finds and things like that. And I just read in one of the local papers that there's been this huge, incredible discovery that is like sort of rocking the Roman history world.
Wow.
So they're doing the sea. They're still in the process of creating the Roman sea line, the metro.
Yes, they were trying to expand the sea line when I lived there 10 years ago. And from what I recall, like every inch, every foot that they went, they would uncover some other archaeological treasure and have to bring a team in, make sure it's not something that they can't destroy, and then slowly expand this line. I mean, there's nothing worse than trying to build a subway in Rome, probably.
No. And I mean, I don't even think it's advisable. I get the idea of like making subway lines that are maybe in the outskirts or connecting the suburbs of the city in. But, you know, they've got stops all the way up to the Roman Forum and the Imperial Forum. And it's just like, why would you do it there? Mm-hmm. Connect it some other way. But anyway, that's not really my business. But
yeah.
But anyway, so they're doing these excavations on the sea line. If you're in Rome and you're anywhere near the Colosseum or the Imperial Fora, you'll see, you know, these gigantic work site that's just, it's kind of taken over that part of the city these days. Anyway, they have discovered in one of the fora, so one of, not the Roman Forum, but a lot of emperors had their own fora, right? Their own forum.
Mm.
And in, I believe it's the Forum of Vespasian, but don't quote me on that because I don't have the article right in front of me. But they found a burial site and they found what they believe based on objects and insignia, you know, in certain non-perishable materials, gold, I assume. They found what they believe to be the body of a Roman emperor.
Mm.
Now, that's already exciting.
Yeah.
But basically, they've been studying this body. I mean, I guess they must have made the discovery a while ago, and they're just finally coming out with the news. Based on bone structure, I don't know, you know, there must be a way to figure this out. They're saying that it was a woman.
Hmm.
But there's... That the emperor
was
a woman.
They're confident that it's an emperor, but that it's a woman.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, because there must have been like a specific type of, I can't remember if it was an arm bracelet or a ring that they wear that is not just like any member of the family is allowed to wear this.
Mm-hmm.
Like think of it like the Pope's fisherman ring, right? That only the Pope wears that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a ring, although I can't remember. Like I said, I don't have the article right in front of me.
Wow. So, I mean.
So what they think, and they're going through this process of looking through documents and retracing this. Because, I mean, Rome, as you, I'm sure, are aware, was a very extremely patriarchal society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, women, it wasn't like ancient Egypt, you know, where like someone like Cleopatra was reigning. Rome was not like that. You know, women were really property of the men. They had almost no rights. Really, the only women who had any kind of rights were the Vestal Virgins. And maybe like the relatives of the emperor. I mean, you had no power. So there's no way that, you know, a woman would ever have been chosen as an emperor, even if she was, let's say, the only surviving daughter of the current emperor. Anyways, oftentimes the crown of the emperor was not passed down necessarily father to son. But a woman would never have been chosen. Now, it's interesting. So I mean, what they think is that this person, whoever she was masquerading as a man.
Oh.
Because how else would she have been emperor? She couldn't have ruled as a woman.
Wow. So she would have been so convincing as a man that she would have actually won the crown, so to speak.
Well, first of all, the emperor in question is Otho, O-T-H-O. You may not be this super familiar with that name, because he was she apparently was emperor for a very short time. I was looking at the dates, literally for about 12 days.
12 days?
28, something like that. Yeah. No, not for 12 days. Sorry. For three months. From the 15th of January to the 16th of April in the year 69. So this was the year 69 AD was known as the year of the four emperors, mm-hmm. because there were literally four different emperors during that year. And the first one was Nero. It was the last year of his reign. And he was basically overthrown. And after that, Galba becomes the emperor. And he was overthrown by Otho, who was then overthrown by Vitellius, who Vitellius then stays emperor for a while. But during that calendar year, there were those four different emperors. And the interesting thing about Otho is, and I mean, I didn't know much about, I mean, I'm already not a huge expert on the Roman Empire, but I looked this up because I was like, okay, who was this emperor? I want to know exactly who he was. He had been apparently was supposedly married. This is where it gets interesting. Was supposedly married to Nero's mistress.
Mm.
Okay, so this is something that would happen. I mean, you see this even in the Renaissance. You see a very, very successful, like a leader, mm-hmm. like a pope, or in other parts of the world, a king who has a mistress and marries her off to one of his courtiers. Okay. And it's kind of like a fake marriage. It's a marriage of convenience so that she can have a name and maybe have a title.
Mm-hmm.
But the king or whoever it is can know that his mistress is there and nobody else is going to be able to be with her because she's been safely married off. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. So assuming, too, that the person that she's been married off to doesn't get to, like, you know, share
a bed with her. That's often part of the deal.
Oh, okay.
You know, you marry your mistress off to one of your generals or one of your courtiers with the expectation that he won't have sex with her, and maybe you give him a title. You know, you give him a reason to do this. So think about this, Katie. Did he marry his mistress off to this quote unquote man?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe he knew that he was actually a woman.
That's interesting.
Or maybe he didn't know, but he thought, well, this is just a really feminine guy. He was at that point, she was at that point, maybe I should just say they, the governor of Lusitania, which I don't even know where Lusitania is.
yeah. Oh, but, well, not important.
But anyway, you know, Rome had lots of territories because they were conquering. And so he was the governor of one of these distant areas. And apparently he was married. She was married to Nero's mistress, Poppaea Sabina. But apparently, to even thicken the plot further, Nero eventually forced Otho to divorce Poppaea because he wanted to marry her himself. I guess he decided, I'm done with this charade. Mm-hmm. I want to actually be with the woman I love. I'll marry her. But apparently he never forgave Otho for marrying his mistress, although...
That doesn't seem right.
A woman. Yeah. I mean, that's what it says. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what they cooked up?
Yeah.
You know, considering that Nero maybe was aware of this to cover up this this scandal. But anyway, I don't know if you've heard of the female pope. I mean, that's also a big mystery. A lot of people talk about, you know, Pope Joan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great story. It's a great legend. But whether or not it's true is... You know, it's up for debate. And I think most historians would say, actually, it's not true. It's something that was sort of invented over the years. But if this is true, and there was a Roman emperor. Now, you know, like I said, she only lasts 3 months.
Right.
So maybe not the most effective emperor. But I don't know that I would hold that against her, considering even Galba, who came right before, was only emperor for the same period or maybe even less.
And remind me, Pope Joan was a person that they think at one point a woman. Was she a woman that was actually in charge? Because I remember there was a fiction novel that was written about that you were reading, I believe, when I lived in Rome.
Yeah, I loved that. That was historical fiction. And I thought it was done really, really well. So, I mean, it's most likely that Pope Joan didn't exist. but I can't remember now. I mean, I did listen to a podcast about this in which two historians basically debunked Pope Joan to my chagrin. I was like, oh man, I really wanted to believe in Pope Joan. But apparently all of the documentation to do with her, if she existed, was all like 200, 300 years after she would have been living. And so people think it was maybe invented, or it was a story, or it was a legend. But no, they say that she was the Pope, a woman masquerading as a man. Oh, Same sort of thing.
Well, yeah. Interesting. So, I mean, have you seen much buzz about this? Are people talking about this in Rome?
I'm seeing some stuff on, like, you know, my fellow tour guides in Rome, social media. I'm seeing people like talking about this because it's, you know, it's out. It's crazy. I mean, I don't think it's 100% sure yet, but they're saying that it is.
Wow. It's interesting. We haven't heard a thing about this in the United States. You'd think like,
oh, really?
Not a thing. And I even read the newspapers this morning. So I don't know. It seems like, I don't know, maybe it's just slow trickling news, or normally, like, what with how much people think about the Roman Empire, apparently, according to social media, you would think it would hit us like slap in the face.
Oh, wait, Katie, I have to add this. This is from the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Of Otho, whose official name is Marcus Salvius Otho. It says that Suetonius was one of the great, you know, historians of his day.
Okay.
And he wrote The Lives of the Caesars. He's kind of the last word on, you know, contemporary history for these guys. He is said to have been of moderate height, splay-footed and bandy-legged, but almost feminine in his care of his person.
Hmm.
He had the hair of his body plucked out, and because of the thinness of his locks, he wore a wig so carefully fashioned and fitted to his head that no one suspected it. Moreover, they say that he used to shave every day and smear his face with moist bread, beginning the practice with the appearance of the first down so as never to have a beard.
Oh, moist bread, too. How interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Huh.
Did he really shave every day, or did he have this whole ritual that he pretended that he had this specific protocol in order that his face always looked like he didn't even have the hint of a beard?
Wow. This is all so cool. So interesting. Thank goodness for the Metro C line.
It says he was very vain and effeminate. Juvenal says this. Mm-hmm. And he looked at himself in the mirror before going into battle and plastered his face with dough in order to look good.
I like the concept of plastering your face with dough, too. Is this a beauty secret that we should have kept track of through the years?
Oh, no. Maybe it's the like yeast does something.
Maybe we're doing all these like crazy things like Botox when really we should just be rubbing bread dough all over our faces every morning.
Hmm. Perhaps.
Wow. Very interesting. I got to get Mary Beard on the line, historian Mary Beard, and get her opinion on this stuff.
Yeah, she probably has a lot to say.
Yeah, you would think so.
So, well, Katie, I just have one last thing to say to you.
Okay.
April Fools! Of course, Katie is in on this too.
Yeah, I am. I know about it. Yep, that was all fake. All of it was fake. But boy, really good job tying in real facts to the fake discovery, because that is the key to making a great April Fool's joke.
It is true. It's a key to any good lie is have details. If you want to fool somebody, you have to have these like really specific details that are like, they couldn't have made that up. It's got to be. And the truth is all of the things I said are true, you know, with the exception of him being dug up and turning out to be a woman. But that was a total coincidence. I was like, okay, who should I pick to pretend? I'm like, it's got to be somebody who nobody's really heard of.
Yeah, because we were joking when we were thinking about doing this about maybe that it should be Nero or something. Like something like, what? That could possibly be true.
Nero would be impossible because he was just too well known. But I think Otho, it was a surprise. I discovered half of this, you know, like 5 minutes before we started taping. So,
I mean, in the Wikipedia description that you said is actually written there. Like if people were to look it up.
It's there. Suetonius in The Lives of the Caesars. It's a true quote that I read about him smearing his face with moist bread.
So we should all still try that. We should still try to use the moist bread to see if it helps our youth. That is so funny and interesting and such a... why April Fool's Day is kind of brilliant is because of things like that. It's also the real danger of the internet, because some of you are going to be like, oh, wow, what a great story. And then a year from now, you'll be like, wait a minute, wasn't there an emperor that was discovered in Rome that was actually found to be a woman? Like, it almost insidiously becomes like a part of like real fact if it's something that you hear somewhere along the line. You know,
well, not to mention people who maybe don't have time to listen to the full episode in one sitting. And they like pause it halfway through and they're like out with drinks tonight and they haven't finished the episode and they're telling their friends about it.
Yeah, did you know they made this great discovery in Rome? It's so true. It's so true. I mean, there are so many ways that you could go with being tricked as far as like the internet is concerned and April Fool's Day. I don't know if I ever mentioned to you, you know, because sometimes, like you said, if it's close to something that would be plausible, then it's the perfect thing to do. And years ago, when I was working for National Public Radio, it was a common practice to do some sort of fake story on April Fool's Day. It was not unheard of, you know, and we had a really good time with it. Like, I made a great, really obnoxious trailer for the new show that my station was going to be playing, and it was basically like a morning zoo. It was basically the antithesis of what people who want to listen to NPR want to hear, you know, with like a bunch of sound effects and people being like, woo, you know, and we played this 1 minute trailer and so many people called the station. We're like, what is this? And they were just like outraged. Like, you can't play a show like this. But when it got outlawed kind of nationally across the NPR network, where it kind of went out and was like, we are not doing April Fool's Day stories anymore, was because one of the national shows did a very convincing story about how the United States was going to outlaw the zip code. Have I told you this before? Like that the whole mailing system was going to change and zip codes were no longer going to be used. But the story was confusing enough that people were like, well, wait, what's going to happen in its place? I don't understand what I'm supposed to do now if I'm mailing a letter. And they just got flooded with confused people trying to figure out, like, well, how am I supposed to mark this envelope now? And after that happened, they were like, okay, as a credible news source, we probably should not be putting out fake stories, especially ones that seem so real or so plausible.
So did they never say April Fool's at the end?
I'm sure they did, but like you said, like, people can miss that stuff. Like, if you're kind of coming and going in transit, in the car, only half listening while you drop the kids off at the carpool line, you know, you can miss things like that very easily. You know, go all the way back to the War of the Worlds broadcast, right?
Yeah.
Back then, people heard about this alien invasion, and yeah, eventually they came out and they said, yeah, this was mid... It's busy at Tiffany's house. People came out mid-play. If you go back and listen to the actual War of the Worlds, mid-play, it becomes very obvious that it's not a real thing. It becomes obvious that it's a play. They even say, like, this is a broadcast based on H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. But by that time, so many people are freaking out about the alien invasion. They're, like, running from their homes. They're, like, releasing the horses, you know? They're like, out in the community checking on their moms. And so they miss the fact that it was all fake. It's definitely a risk. You are getting to hear the laughter and sounds of Claudio and Aurelio. Tiffany has gone to take care of it as a mother. This is not fake.
Can you give them the cookies? Sorry. I'm like, can you just give them cookies, please?
Give them cookies. We're almost done.
Aurelio has a bloody nose. Aurelio has a bloody nose. What's going on?
What if this was all fake, too? That's all. That was all just actors in the background.
Yeah. Sorry, I think you were in the middle of something.
No, not at all. I mean, just like that's these jokes, especially jokes in the media, I think, can get easily misconstrued as truth, you know, because it's hard. Yeah. People take things literally sometimes, especially if they think it's from a trusted news source, for instance, or like, you know, it's your best friend telling you that their boyfriend broke up with them or something. You tend to buy it because it's your best friend, even if it's April Fool's Day.
Yeah. Have you ever been tricked really badly?
Yes, one time, and I can't remember if I have told this story on the show or not. I was working in an office, and it was a pretty boring job. And it was particularly boring because I had gotten my boyfriend hired at the job also. And I don't remember how or why I'd gotten him hired, but once he was there, he sort of made my job almost obsolete. I didn't really have much to do anymore. But the people in the office really liked having me around. People liked to talk to me, stop by my desk and say hello. And so they kept me on anyway, kind of knowing that I wasn't doing anything. And I mean, I was like getting up and making copies for people and opening contracts and putting files together. But most of the day, I was there for 8 hours a day. Most of the day, I had nothing to do. So to fill the time, I start playing this game called Marble Madness that's already installed on my computer at work. And I probably spend hours a day playing it. Hours a day. And as far as I know, the only person who knows about this is my boyfriend, who also works there. But one day I go to lunch and I come back and on my desk chair is a very official looking letter that says, we've noticed that your work to, what would it say? Like, I have the letter somewhere. Like, your work to play ratio on your computer is like wildly out of balance. And
that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, it was written so much better than this. So this is just me making it up off the top of my head. And it says, and we would like to have a meeting with you, you know, and it lays out a time. And then on the letter, in that very official way that it used to be, it said down below who was CC'd on the letter. And one of the persons CC'd was the big boss of the company. And I am like, oh no, like, oh, this is bad. They're going to fire me. And I'm just sitting there stewing and I want to go like talk to my boyfriend about it, being like, oh my gosh, they're going to totally fire me. And he's nowhere to be found, like nowhere to be found. And he's gone for hours. And the whole afternoon, I'm just sweating buckets, right? And then finally, he comes by and lets me know that the letter was just a joke, that he had written the letter. And I think he revealed it so quickly because he knew, at one, I was in a panic about it. And number two, he didn't think he was going to be gone that long. Like, he was gone for lunch, and then he came back, and he immediately got pulled into a meeting. And so the whole time he's in the meeting, he's like, oh, no, Katie must be totally freaking out. So, and I was. So, yeah, that was probably the time where someone got one over on me, the very best that I'd ever,
that
I'd
is,
ever experienced.
That is actually brilliant.
It was very good.
And cruel.
Very cruel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can physically imagine the physical sensation that went through your body. Like, your face just got suddenly red, right?
Yeah.
Not just red, hot. Your face got hot, like, right?
Yeah.
I know that feeling of like, oh my God, I'm caught. Mm-hmm. It's the worst feeling.
When you start planning what your defense is, well, I mean, maybe I need less hours. Like, I don't really need this much time at work to get done what I need to do. You know, you just start coming up with all this stuff. Like, I don't have 8 hours of work to do every day. I'm happy to do more, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Luckily, I safely went back to playing endless amounts of Marble Madness the very next day. And then eventually, you'll be happy to know,
Learn your lesson.
Well, it wasn't real. And,
right, true.
And, you know, and then, of course, very shortly thereafter, I'd like to believe I finally decided to go pursue finding work that was actually more interesting.
Good for you.
Yes.
Good for you.
How about you?
And your life was forever changed.
And my life was forever changed. Not immediately. I did move on from that job to working in a bar, but it was eventually changed into something more interesting. how about you? Any great fool?
I don't have any good ones. Only that my mom, when I was in high school, she used to sometimes come into my room first thing in the morning on April Fool's Day and tell me something amazing when I was just waking up. Like, we're going to Paris tomorrow, you know, something like that. Like, she'd tell me something so good. And I would be too groggy to like sit and think about the fact it's a Wednesday. Why would we be going to Paris tomorrow? What or whatever. Like, I would just be like, oh, it's April Fool's.
That is so mean. I mean,
it's so mean.
In
right?
general,
it's worse in a sense.
So did we just do a terrible thing by doing an April Fool's Day story on this show?
No, because you know what? I think people enjoy it. If it's not something personal, I mean, people out there who, for them, the Roman Empire is personal, they are not going to have been fooled by that.
Mm-hmm. They would have known that emperors would be cremated rather
than
buried.
Exactly. That was our fatal flaw of our trick. But I think if you're just a regular person who doesn't think about the Roman Empire all day long, so meaning a woman, just kidding, you might, I think, yeah, I think you're delighted by this. And I think you have to be really a little bit full of yourself to not enjoy being taken in once in a while.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, I told you that my worry is that with the internet being what it is, that we're all being taken in forever on a daily basis by everything. Like, not everything, obviously, but by so many things we see. Can I end by saying, talking about the video that you sent me this morning?
Sure, sure.
A video you sent me this morning.
I also think that maybe before we get to that,
okay,
I was just thinking, like, as an experiment, I could put up on our social media site, make a fake blog post and post it as if it's real and see if it doesn't like go viral.
Oh my God. I don't know if you should do that. I mean, it would be a very interesting experiment, but I don't know if you should do it because it totally could. And then it becomes another thing that's just a piece of misinformation that's on the internet.
So what were you going to say?
So we better not. I leave it up to you.
Okay.
And those of you listening will be in on the joke if she does do it. So you sent me a video this morning. It was also sent to us by several of our listeners through social media.
Yeah.
And it is a video by The Dodo, which is sort of known for making, or at least wide distributing, videos that are sort of precious and funny and cute, often involving animals. And this particular one is about a little boy, 2 years old, who supposedly has befriended a crow named Russell. Every moment this little toddler is outside, Russell is hanging out, playing with this two-year-old. I mean, it's presented as they're just the best of friends. This is a relationship for the ages. It's a real heartwarming story. And that is a jackdaw, not a crow. I don't know how different they actually are from one another from a scientific standpoint. I know, of course, they're in the same family. But also, I told you, I said, I just don't buy this. There's no way that, you know, the way it's presented, that this story is like this two-year-old has befriended this crow, or more likely this crow has befriended this two-year-old. And I said, for me, the telltale sign is that crow is a baby. And you can tell.
See, I didn't notice that.
You can tell because a baby crow has a bright red mouth. And so me watching, knowing that, and watching this video, I'm thinking, sort of alarmed, where are this baby crow's parents? Because to me, it says, oh, there are no parents around. Like, this crow is following this little kid around like it is its parent. For one, which is kind of like it's basically chasing like the thing that's the closest in its size. My guess is that the baby probably drops food quite a bit. And this crow, I mean, hypothetically, I don't know for sure the situation of this particular bird. But if this crow has no parents, it's got to like figure out how to get food and fast by itself. Because normally you've seen crows and jackdaws normally like, if a baby is near it, they're shoving food in that baby's face, you know? Like, the baby's whining and crying, and then they're shoving food in its face. So this baby crow has had to, like, figure out how to survive on its own. And it's found that the lightest touch is this little kid, most likely. I mean, there's even a part of the video where the crow is in the house, you know?
Yeah.
While the kid is eating food. Which, by the way, parents don't do that. Like, you know, it is also a wild creature that could carry diseases. Like avian flu. I don't know. I just think I know that we love these like heartwarming stories, but you gotta be like somewhat skeptical. Or you could just be like, what a cute warm story, but also like that's probably not true.
Yeah. I think that's a good reminder for us all.
Yeah. On April Fool's Day, for goodness sake, be skeptical. If you can only find one source for this and it's something like the Dodo, it's probably not true. Okay. That's my news tip for you. If you can't find it confirmed anywhere else other than this one network, it might not be true. You need to look a little deeper.
But if you ever come across a story about a little girl who got gifts from crows, that is a true story.
That is
because
a true
Katie
story.
Was there.
That is a true story. And that's like how that story is how a lot of you found this particular podcast. But let me also tell you this, and I'm going to just leave it there without telling you anymore. It is not the whole story. That is a true story. Everything in that story, if you read the BBC News article or hear it on this particular show, Those are the two true sources. The other ones are probably ripoffs, but those are the two true sources. However, that is not the whole story of like what was happening. So there is always more, and there are always like
always more.
There's always dark sides to light things. So just know that. That's just the way it is. And maybe one day we'll talk about that, but not today. So we'll leave it there. And this is no joke. This is the end of the show. Happy April Fool's Day. Or if you're listening to this later, hope you had a good April Fool's Day. Whenever you're listening to this, however many years in the future. And until next time, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell.
I'm Tiffany Parks.
Join us again. Bye.
If you love the show, take a moment to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We love to read while you listen, and your rating might help someone else discover the show. Thanks.